Hi, I'm Kurt Bruner, and welcome to the podcast. You're about to listen to a recording that was made back when I was with Focus on the Family several years ago for a show called The World at Home. And this is a fun episode. It explores the challenge we parents have on whether or not to push our kids in different contexts, such as sports or academics or music or whatever it might be in your home. So I hope you find this entertaining and encouraging as you navigate issues like this in the process of being a parent or it being a spouse, a grandparent, or whatever your life season may be. So again, I hope you enjoy this. It's called The World at Home.
Sports, I'd be, when I grow up, I'd be a sports maker guy.
A sports maker guy?
Yeah, I make up sports.
So you'd invent sports?
Yeah. Okay. If there was no sports when I was a little kid, like okay. I am now.
It's Wednesday, the night I lay next to my son Troy and chat before he falls asleep. The topic? Well, Troy loves, lives, eats, breathes, and of course plays sports. So he's discussing his favorite, inline roller hockey.
My favorite thing in the whole world is hockey.
Like his two older brothers, we started putting Troy into various YMCA and Pee Wee sport teams at about 4 years old. Unlike Kyle and Sean, however, Troy turned out to be one of the star players on every team.
I'm the MVP on my team, too. Did you know that, Dad?
The what?
MVP.
What does MVP stand for?
Most value player. And I don't know in the world what value means, but...
You don't know what value means?
Uh-uh.
3 years ago, after watching Troy skate during a roller rink league hockey game, someone suggested we must put him into a more serious league. Until that moment, I didn't know there were serious leagues for kids who watch Blue's Clues. While knowing dads shouldn't try to live their own athletic dreams through their sons, I signed him up anyway.
So how long have you been playing hockey?
About 3 years.
3 years. You're only seven.
Nobody told me that the uniforms and skates would cost $300 or that the combination of practice and tournament time would all but eliminate time for just about anything else in our lives. But such are the sacrifices we make for happy kids.
Remember when they asked you to go to...
Ohio?
Ohio, that's what it was, yeah.
For science? Yeah, when I couldn't go.
That's kind of a long ways to go to Ohio just to play hockey.
With the Stallions? I'd do anything to do a tournament with the Stallions.
You would?
Pay $100? I don't care. I'll do anything.
Do you have $100?
No.
Hmm.
Only that has.
Where would you get it?
Where
would you get the $100?
Somebody would give a rich man.
Or maybe you could have all your teeth pulled out and give them to the tooth fairy.
I'd only give me about $15.
And plus you wouldn't have any teeth.
And nobody warned I'd have to consider flying my son to another state while he still believes in the tooth fairy. The other day, Troy wrote a short paper summarizing his life story. It reads, "My name is Troy Bruner. I am seven years old.
I have one sister. I have two brothers. I love hockey. I am the MVP for my team. My team has lost only to one team, the Panthers, in overtime."
41 words, 23 dedicated to hockey, including his MVP status. Neither mom nor dad even got an honorable mention. Because he's a natural athlete, we've never really had to push Troy. But during one crucial game, possibly that one we lost to the Panthers in overtime, I also lost my cool. For some reason, Troy was playing way below his usual greatness. When the buzzer rang, I joined Troy and the rest of the deflated fathers in the locker room. "Good game, buddy. You did your best." That's what I should have said. Instead, I shouted at him. "Troy, what are you doing out there? You're hardly even trying. I expect you to play hard, not casually skate in circles." Big tears swelled up in Troy's eyes. Losing is bad enough, but to have Dad yell at you about it is pretty awful.
So were you mad when I yelled at you?
Yes.
Yeah, did it hurt your feelings?
Yes.
Did you forgive me?
I don't know, I can't remember.
He remembers the game. He remembers me yelling. But he doesn't remember whether he forgave me. Ouch. On this edition of The World at Home, we're exploring how we parents handle our kids in performance situations, sports, music, grades, manners, whatever it may be, trying to balance their best and our reputation. To push or not to push? That is the question. Our next stop, the home of Paul and Elizabeth McCusker and their budding prodigy.
Tommy, our son, he's six, had this old telephone of ours that had sort of this memo button that you could push and digitally record. And he got the biggest kick out of this. So he was in the background and I could hear him. He was recording himself on this telephone. And he was singing what I realized later was Mozart. And he was doing the Eine kleine Nacht music. And I could hear him. And he was doing it note for note. It was perfect. And I thought, I don't think this is normal for a six-year-old boy.
He's always had a lovely voice. He's always liked to sing. He picks out tunes on the piano. I did actually arrange for some piano lessons with a friend of mine informally, and he'd be about 2 seconds on the piano and then, hey, let me show you my trains. You know, just no interest, real interest in it.
Later on, he was doing the William Tell Overture. And when I asked him where he was getting this music from. Yeah, I asked him where it came from. And he said, it was from the Warner Brothers cartoons. It was from Looney Tunes. And then he began to describe that in this, with William Tell, it was Elmer Fudd doing something on the screen. And so on one hand, I was really impressed that he was doing classical music. But on the other hand, it does kind of burst your bubble when you realize it's because he's getting it from the cartoons. But at least he's getting a good education from the cartoons. You know, I think he may be gifted. I think there's something we should be doing with this. And we have a piano that belonged to my mother. And I thought he should be having piano lessons. And so I said to Elizabeth, I think it's time now. We should make him take piano lessons.
My concern was that if we forced him to take formal lessons, that he would hate it, because you always hear about people hating piano lessons, hating violin lessons. And while I want his talent to be explored, I don't want him to hate the lesson.
I'm less concerned whether he resents it or not, because I think later in life he'll resent it if we don't make him take lessons now, or at least give him every opportunity to do it. Because our argument was, you said you didn't want him to resent it to be forced, and I said, well, we actually do force him to do homework because we think it's in his best interest, so why wouldn't we at least push this, at least as far as we could?
I would like him to have piano lessons. I mean, I once heard that there's two things you should teach your kids. They should learn to swim and learn to read music. And I'm absolutely with that. And I'd love for him to learn piano. I just want it to be the right thing for him.
Well, I'm among the millions walking the planet who can be heard from time to time saying, I wish I'd stuck with piano lessons. Disgrace and regret among us quitters usually gets triggered by the finger magic of someone who didn't, someone with the self-discipline to practice scales, while the rest of us watched Gilligan's Island reruns. Someone like Chiwa Tan.
I have a bachelor's in a music degree in performance, and I also have two master's degrees. One is in performance, and I give recitals. I'm a composer, and I teach. I make music. I do chamber work. You know, I'm a concert level pianist, and I love music making. Is the heart of my passion.
Chiwa grew up in Malaysia in a culture and a family that expected their children to excel in the arts. For Chiwa, that meant the dreaded piano practice.
My parents would not allow me to do any other activities. I did have dance, and because of that, when I wanted to be in the badminton team, I remember my mother said, no, I'm sorry, you cannot do that. You have your music, and you have your dance, and you can't do anything else. Their pushing came in the form of making sure I was supervised in my practice, making sure I was doing my assignments just the way the teacher wanted me to. I do remember that the pushing also came in the form of clipping out newspaper articles of you know, pianist that came through, some child prodigy. If there was a concert in town, my mother would drive me the 2 hours out to the city to go and see it at great expense and sacrifice on her part. And so there was that. I remember them buying recordings, and this is Malaysia. You know, it was not that easy to get good classical recordings. But the few tapes that they could get, they would buy them and they would play them in the car. So I think the pushing came in, you know, giving high expectations and giving me a vision of what I could be like. And they didn't say you have to be a concert pianist, but they did say you have to practice. Looking back, and particularly I've thought about this a lot lately as a parent, I think that if they had not done that for me, I would not be playing today.
Being pushed as a child clearly worked for Chiwa. Now she has a family of her own, so I wondered, what parts of her parents' strict approach does she use with her own kids?
The affirmation, the positive affirmation. I realize that perhaps sometimes I don't do that enough, but my mother in particular was always saying, you can play this, or one day you can play in that place. And she wasn't saying one day you have to be a concert pianist, but no matter what you did, she was always setting a vision. She gave me a vision for something I could be, and it was beyond what I was doing right now. And that's what I would like to do. That's what I try to do for my daughter, too, is I try to tell her, oh, you know, you are just going to be a marvelous pianist. I don't talk about it as a profession. I just talk about it as something that she's just going to be so good at. But in the meantime, we have some yucky practice to do that's a little bit painful. One of the most important things of pushing a child or pushing yourself is that you find out for yourself your limits and the limit you can go to excel. A lot of times, their true best is about 75% of what their maximum capacity is. And when you push, if you push your child to truly do their best, they will find that that is much more than what they originally thought of. I think what people struggle with is the pain of pushing. And we hear all these traumatic stories and all that. But I have to just say, as coming from a discipline that requires pushing and from a culture that pushes, that pushing is painful, but if it's done for the right reasons and, you know, it is worth it. It does have good fruit.
So what happens when the pushing comes from someone other than mom or dad? Our next stop, Norman and Tina Dumash at their daughter Stephanie's soccer game.
Nice running, Stephanie.
I had a free shot, so I looked at the corner and saw it was open, and I kicked it in the corner. I like it because it's a running sport and a team sport. You get to pass to players, and you get to run just about as fast as you can and get to have fun.
It's kind of a house rule that we get the children to do a little bit of diversity in either piano, music, and sports.
Yeah, to be well-rounded as opposed to just, you know, a sport. And she was 6 years old, so we just brought her to practice, and then within 5 minutes, she took to it. At the end of the practice, and I said, see, did you like soccer? And she said, it was a lot of fun.
And I think I observed it the first time at her first game, where she went down the field and scored a goal, and her arms went flying in the air. I mean, she was full of joy, and it wasn't, joy of pride. It was joy of skill. It was clearly something she enjoyed.
Norman and Tina have one of those athletic marvel kids. Without a single shove, Stephanie has discovered a natural talent for soccer. So every Saturday, the family gets to watch her excel. No pressure, no pushing, no problem. That is, until her soccer prowess gets noticed by everyone who sees her play, including a few club teams.
We've had a couple years of being called and so forth for competitive teams. And even at the age of 9 and 10, I think that's a little young for them to be looking at competitive levels.
And I think, too, that, as you said, the pressure comes from the outside. you know, from others, but as far as within our house and from us, we don't feel any pressure, no, at all.
And so when the phone calls came in for her to compete, we pretty much had decided that we're not interested, even though they did keep pressuring us. They would call more than once.
It's a lot of pressure for a little girl. So how does she deal with such flattering invitations?
I just say I'm happy with my team, and I just want to stay with them. I like my team because I've been playing for a lot of players for all of my years, and they have played as many years pretty much as I have.
This girl's got it all. Talent, opportunity, even an irresistible humility. So, while keeping the Sharks at bay with one hand, how far do Mom and Dad plan to push Stephanie with the other?
The plan is basically continue with the balance, continue to keep Stephanie in the loop and see what she wants, but at the same time, just give her that sense of, you know, direction and a little bit of pushing, which she might need.
So, what do our kids need? Do you remember that scene in the animated film The Incredibles when one dad laments,
"It's psychotic. They keep creating new ways to celebrate mediocrity."
A dad named Lester Ayala agrees. He told the Wall Street Journal that he had won 20 trophies for high school and college basketball, each representing a team championship, MVP, or All-Star commendation. But his 11 and 7-year-old sons already have 20 trophies, just for showing up, thanks to something called participation awards. For $6 a parent, every child gets to feel like a champion. No hurt feelings, no class rankings, but no recognition of excellence. So some leagues are changing the rules back to clear winners and losers. I'm inclined to agree. But there's a photo on my refrigerator door that reminds me it's not always that simple. My wife Olivia tells that story as our final stop.
Sean stands beside a classmate in front of his first grade teacher, wearing a silly smirk, dressed in Western attire. The smirk suggests he feels a bit self-conscious because a straw hat isn't cool. Having just performed a country music program for the parents, we took advantage of the moment to snap a candid. Most people might consider the photo forgettable, more suited for the discard pile than the refrigerator door, but to me it is a treasured keepsake. Since before he could walk, Sean has been image-conscious, admiring the latest clothes, hairstyles, and hip lingo. Somehow he knew the meaning of cool before he could say the word. To excite Sean when he was 4, I took him shopping for a new shirt or a pair of shoes. He insisted on going along to make sure you selected the right look. 2 years younger than Kyle, he always felt a bit competitive with his older brother. Sean bravely lost enough wrestling matches with Kyle to develop a tough exterior, but underneath hides an extremely tender and vulnerable spirit. Days before the snapshot and the straw hat, Sean attended an all-school awards ceremony. You know, the kind where kids sit Indian style on the gymnasium floor, while camcorder-ready parents stand in the back hoping to capture the big moment when the name of their child gets called. Sean sat in about row 12 with the other first graders, his brother in row 8 with the third grade class. Kurt and I stood in back, watching our sleeping baby with one eye and the ceremony with the other. 15 minutes into the program, we heard our son's name called. Not Sean's, Kyle's. Torn between excitement and dread, I cheered while Kurt hit the record button. We were happy for Kyle, who had received several of these awards before, but worried for Sean, wondering how he would feel if Kyle got an award but he didn't. We held our breath as the principal announced the first grade awards. When they reached the end of the list, Sean remained seated. Pretending not to care, Sean's heart was crushed. Why do they allow siblings to attend these ceremonies together anyway? After the closing announcements, we walked home, Kyle proudly displaying his certificate, Sean tightly holding my hand. Maybe I'll get an award next time, right, Mom? Swallowing the lump in my throat, I willed a cheerful response, "Right, sweetheart, maybe next time." Sean forgot his disappointment within hours, thanks to heaps of sincere but overdone praise from his parents. But I will never forget it. Kyle's certificate went on display in his bedroom, gathering dust with the others. But the photograph of Sean with his teacher made our photo gallery, a continual reminder that no matter how tough he tries to appear on the outside, our second little boy has a very tender heart. And while we may not be able to protect Sean from award assemblies or other more traumatic tragedies, we can nurture his spirit and buy him cool clothes.